Welcome to this UIE Book Corner edition of the Spoolcast. Dan Brown joins Adam Churchill to discuss his book, Designing Together, the Collaboration and Conflict Management Handbook for Creative Professionals. And now, here's Adam.
Everyone, we're back at it in the UIE Book Corner series with a look at Designing Together, the Collaboration and Conflict Management Handbook for Creative Professionals with Dan Brown. It's always great to see what others are saying about the book. One Amazon reviewer described this book as one that will likely save countless design teams their sanity, lead them producing brilliant designs, and learn about themselves as people who can grow and become better. Super excited. Dan was able to carve some time into his busy schedule to discuss the new book, and we're going to record it so you folks can listen in and hear what he has to say. Hey, Dan.
Hi, Adam. How are you?
I'm doing great. So at first glance, the book subtitle sort of caught my attention, right? It talks about what many perceive to be the bookends, the positives and the negatives of team dynamics, conflict and collaboration. What can you say? Can you say a bit more about that perception? Is it the good and the bad? And does the book try to dissuade that?
So it's interesting that you position it as positive and negative. And I think that's one of the things that when I talk to people about conflict, it's actually one of the first things that I ask is, do you think design can happen without conflict? And, you know, regardless of their answer, what's clear in answering that question is that they perceive conflict as a bad thing. So either they're saying, no, it can't because all my projects are extremely hard and I always fight with my colleagues. Or they're saying, yes, it can happen with conflict. And that's where no one ever fights and we all get along really well. And what I'm trying to do is actually position both of these things as essential ingredients to modern web design processes. That is to say, conflict is really the engine of design. It's that back and forth that allows us to get into the details of really complicated web design projects such that we can really flesh out what all the functionality is, what the design needs to be, how it needs to work responsibly. That back and forth is really essential to the design process. And by the same token, because we need to engage with each other in that way, we need better ways of collaborating. That is to say, not just coordinating our activities and not just communicating better, but really making sure that each person does his or her part on the project.
So I need to be honest. It's not on my desk right now, but
unacceptable.
No.
The
card game deck. Surviving design projects. It's always on my desk, and for some reason it's not there now. So just trying to be truthful for our audience. Is the book an evolution of the card deck?
It really is. I mean, just to provide a peek under the hood, I had really been thinking about this topic ever since my first book came out, because my first book is about documentation. And whenever I would teach a workshop on documentation, inevitably the conversation would turn to people saying things like, well, my colleagues don't actually read my documentation, or how do I work better with my colleagues? You know, the documentation is really just an excuse. So I'd really been noodling on this for a long time. And it was sort of like, I almost felt like I was tilting at windmills. Like it was really challenging for me to figure out how to take this topic and turn it into a book. And as I was thinking about it, I kind of zeroed in on this model of there's situations that we face on design projects. Like my favorite one to use as an example is distracted by shiny objects, right? As designers, we're sort of inevitably on a project, someone shows up and says, you know, we really should be using Flash, which is what they said 10 years ago when I first got into this business. And then in addition to situations like that one, there are these techniques that I've started to cultivate over time to help me deal with those situations. And those techniques are not so much, you know, brainstorming games that we might play, but actually little phrases that we can use to frame and position our perspectives on these projects or in these situations. And then the last leg of the stool is traits. And these are, in a sense, the emotional baggage and stylistic baggage that every designer brings to the table in terms of what he or she prefers or how he or she perceives situations. And it's really these three things. Once I zeroed in on that model, I was started to formalize kind of how I was thinking about this so I could classify something as a situation or as a pattern. And then out of that, I started cataloging all of these things, and I thought, you know, this would be a lot of fun to teach a workshop on this and do some role playing where we would kind of set up a situation and people would need to figure out what patterns they could use to deal with that situation. And I was talking to a conference organizer about this, and this guy happened to be based in the UK. So I was walking him through what I had in mind for the workshop, and he said, well, we've got a real problem. And I said, oh, what's that? He said, British people don't like role playing. And I thought, that's interesting, because actually most people I know don't like role playing. And so I really kind of saw the workshop sort of falling apart before my eyes. And I thought, how can I teach people these things? How can I get people to internalize these patterns and recognize these things as situations without, you know, sort of forcing them into role-playing type situations? And at that time, I started playing a lot more board games and card games, and I play this game called Apples to Apples, where someone plays a card and everyone else around the table has to play cards that remind them of that first card. So the Surviving Design Projects was ended up being this mashup of this model that I had come up with the Apples to Apples game design framework. And what's been great about it is I've led workshops where people played this game, and I've talked to people who have bought and played the game on their own. And what they say is that it gave us a nice, easy way to talk about our most challenging projects in a way that was not personal, that didn't put people on the spot. You asked me how the game led to the book, and I didn't answer that question at all. But what I'll say is, once I had the game and I was teaching workshops on it, my friend Liz Danzico at the School of Visual Arts asked me to also put together a workshop on collaboration. And it was that kind of spark that led me to marry the conflict stuff with Surviving Design Projects and the ideas that I had cultivated around collaboration. And those two things worked really well together and just made for a really nice narrative. So that was the genesis of the book in probably many more sentences than you were expecting.
So, Dan, you spoke about some workshops there. And actually, in preparing for this podcast, you told me that topics and discussions from your many workshops were really sort of the inspiration for this new book. Say more about that.
Sure. I mean, the workshop came first. So teaching a workshop about conflict management came first. And it was through people's participation in those workshops that I realized that there was a very keen interest in this. So the game really led to the workshop, which is what led to the book. In the workshops, what was clear was that a lot of the ideas that I've been thinking about relative to this model of patterns, situations, and traits, all of those ideas were really validated. I remember in one workshop I taught, I was talking about this idea of a pattern and, you know, as a simple little tool that you can use to kind of dislodge or redirect a situation. And this woman said that she works with a business partner and that her business partner uses the exact same pattern in every situation. No matter what the situation was, he would use the exact same pattern, which is, even if people were disagreeing vehemently, he would say, well, I think we're all in agreement now. And she said that he used that phrase all the time, regardless of where it was. And that helped me realize that this idea of a pattern, again, a simple tool that I can use, a phrase that I can use, a way of positioning something, are really valuable because people latch onto those and start to recognize those styles that they have. And so through these workshops, it was great because people would start to flesh out the underlying game. They would add their own situations or talk about the patterns that they have used. And that, again, led me to think, you know, I think there's potentially real interest for something more than just a card game here.
Dan, any tips or tricks or specific how-tos that seem to be resonating with folks more than others?
Well, nothing comes to mind, but I think what the book lays out and what I'm really excited to get people's feedback on is what I call the four virtues of collaboration. I think we're seeing a lot of books out there on collaboration, and we're starting to see some books on how to get people to work really well together or to incorporate visualization into their projects and into their processes. What I'm really hoping people latch onto is what I call the four virtues of collaboration. And these are kind of foundational or starting points that yield interesting behaviors that I think get people to work together better. Those four virtues are clarity and definition, accountability and ownership, awareness and respect, and openness and honesty. I mean, it's eight words, but I've paired them together because they really represent kind of a range of foundational values that ultimately lead to, I think, better collaboration. For example, openness and honesty is one that sort of pervades everything. This idea that as a designer, I'm going to be a much better contributor if I can be honest about how I feel about different design things that are being laid out in front of me, different design work, as well as if I'm getting honest feedback. At the same time, that needs to be paired with something like accountability and ownership so that I feel a sense of accountability as I'm making those design decisions and I feel a stake of ownership in the design work that we're doing.
Anything in the tips and tricks that people are going to find that has surprised, I guess, people of the card game and maybe something that you expect to find with readers of the book, that there's maybe a tip or a trick in there that's going to catch them off guard a bit or make them see something differently?
I think some of the more interesting patterns that have started to resonate with people are things that ask them to reframe. We often get stuck in our own perspective. And so it can be challenging for someone to show up and reframe the problem or the conflict or the situation that they're in. So one example of that is a pattern that I call communicate implications. And that is really just to help people understand what the consequences of a design decision are. And this is really important to design because as we get more and more people involved, different types of people involved with the design process, helping them recognize that one decision really has a ripple effect throughout a system, a design system that you might be working on or an application that you might be working on is really important. It's a mechanism for educating the rest of the design team, but also clarifying in your own mind why some decisions are better than others. So I call that pattern communicate implications, right? So I've made a design decision and now, or someone has asked me to reconsider a design decision. And I want to frame that as, okay, well, let's think about what the downstream impact is.
So Dan, folks are going to read this book. What are the most common things that you think, or actually that you hope folks will do differently after reading the book?
I think it's a really interesting question because I was talking to someone on my team earlier this week and she had referred to it as a self-help book. And that surprised me a little bit. I guess what surprised me was that I felt like it was actually a fairly natural label for it. What I'm hopeful people take away, and I think what's going to be hardest for them to take away, is the desire to reflect on their own behaviors and really take a very critical look at themselves and whether they can be doing something to make their design team better. It's a book that's geared not towards leads or facilitators. It's geared toward everyday designers who play a role in collaboration and play a role in team dynamics. And the book asks them to look hard at what are they doing to make collaboration work better? What are they doing to make conflict as healthy and productive as possible? And so I think that's, in some ways, the book is a challenge in disguise because it's asking them to reflect on their own work, their own personalities, their own traits, and their own contributions to the design process.
Well, Dan, this was awesome. Thanks for joining us and for making some time for us.
Adam, I had a lot of fun. I love talking about this stuff, so I appreciate the opportunity.
Good. So again, the book is called Designing Together, the Collaboration and Conflict Management Handbook for Creative Professionals. And its author is the awesome Dan Brown. And if you love Dan's work and teaching style as much as we do, I can't encourage you enough to check out his other book, Communicating Design, which is another beautiful publication and sure to help your design team efforts. So thanks, everyone, for joining us for this UIE Book Corner. Shoot us an email. Let us know what authors we should be speaking with. You can reach us at feedback@uie.com. And goodbye for now.
For more great UX resources, visit uie.com. As always, thank you for listening.